We see a lot of exposure to pesticides. There's pesticides being sprayed at the time that people are working out there. When there should be an alert system, right? People should not be working for several hours when pesticides are being sprayed. And so definitely various things also related to the heat, the fires. There's evacuation zones where farm workers are actually being brought in to finish the harvest, especially in places where Newsom has a winery, in Sonoma County, right, Napa, and definitely many of these issues are not being addressed the way that they should.
Today, Senator Romero, we just have 30 seconds. Are you negotiating behind the scenes with the governor, and is it possible? I mean, I think all legislation has to be on his desk, what, by September 1st, that it could happen this term?
Everything is possible. We have negotiated our bill with some of the amendments that the 90% of what the governor wanted, we included in the bill. And it is being voted today in the Senate, and it is going to go to the Assembly. There is still a possibility, but it is going to pass the Senate, it's going to pass the Assembly, and it's going to be 100% up to him to sign it.
Teresa Romero, I want to thank you for being with us, President of the United Farm Workers, and Irene de Baraycua of Lideras Campesinas, which works with female farm workers. That does it for our show. In breaking news, NASA has scrubbed its planned launch of its new moon rocket, the Space Launch System, which was scheduled to lift off from Florida's Kennedy Space Center this morning. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Currently accepting applications for People and Culture Manager. Check democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
Every single person since SB8 has been a law has needed to travel out of state. Every single person that's reached our line.
We've been clinging on to Roe versus Wade and the protection that it offered. And it feels as though that protection is being taken away from us. So it feels as though this is a moment of survival. And I think any moments of survival can be very scary.
What did abortion access look like in America when Roe was the law of the land? Tune into KBOO's Roe on the Rocks, a limited series podcast where I investigate this question as I take you through the months leading up to the U.S. Supreme Court decision that effectively overturned Roe. That's Roe on the Rocks, airing Thursdays at 9 a.m. You don't want to miss it.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, three are dead in a Bend grocery store shooting, the Southwest Oregon Rum Creek fire doubles in size over the weekend, and NASA is canceling a moon mission launch. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Monday, August 29th, 2022. I'm Michelle Coppola. A mass shooting at a Bend grocery store on Sunday evening has left three dead, including the shooter. The victims were 84-year-old Glenn Bennett and 66-year-old Donald Surratt Jr. The shooter entered the Forum Shopping Center from a nearby residential neighborhood where he lived, walking through the other parking lots and spraying fire from an AR-15. He sprayed shots into the Big Lots store in the complex before shooting Bennett at the entrance to the store. Surratt, the other victim, worked at the Safeway and attempted to disarm the shooter. Police say that his efforts likely saved more lives as cops arrived. The shooter was identified as 20-year-old Ethan Miller, who died from a self-inflicted gunshot wound. A social media account in his name showed that for the past several months, Miller had planned to carry out a school shooting at Mountain View High School, but couldn't wait anymore. This tragedy is the latest in a string of grocery store shootings. A May shooting in Buffalo, New York, targeted black grocery shoppers, killing 10. Last year, 10 were killed in a mass shooting in a King Supers market in Boulder, Colorado. The FBI reports that active shooter incidents jumped more than 50% in the last year. Police say it will take time to collect and process all the evidence since the crime scene is so large. They also say that a motive has not yet been determined. The Southwest Oregon Rum Creek fire has doubled in size over the weekend. It's now covering 10,000 acres in Josephine County. The fire started August 17th from a lightning strike and has grown since, threatening the unincorporated community of Galice. Fire experts expect the blaze to continue to grow thanks to strong winds, dry fuels, and a heat wave coming into the area. That all makes the fuels more receptive to fire. Over 900 personnel are working on the blaze, and one firefighter has died. Logan Taylor was 25 years old. He was from Talent, Oregon, and he was killed after being struck by a tree close to where the blaze started. Governor Brown has declared a state of emergency in response to the fire, which allows the state to access greater resources to contain the blaze. An air quality advisory for smoke from the Rum Creek fire has been extended to Curry, Jackson, and Josephine counties until at least Thursday. Residents are recommended to stay inside when possible and to keep windows and doors closed. They're also recommended to avoid strenuous outdoor activity. Rural communities often struggle to apply for federal dollars, such as those from grants. A $1 billion pilot program in the CHIPS Act is expected to help them. Eric Tegedoff has more on the Assistance for Rural Economies.
A program approved by Congress aims to give rural communities in Oregon and elsewhere a boost when applying for federal dollars. The CHIPS Act, passed last month, boosts semiconductor manufacturing in the U.S. It also includes a $1 billion pilot program to help distressed communities apply for economic development funds. It's coming at an especially critical time as legislation like the infrastructure package passed in Congress directs billions of dollars to states. Jim McCauley is legislative director for the League of Oregon Cities.
The biggest challenge that many of the small cities in Oregon or some of the other rural communities across the country face is really a question of resources. And those resources come down to whether or not they have staff in-house that can write grants or that can manage projects.
McCauley says communities also struggle with matching grants, but notes that Oregon aims to help with this. The pilot program in the CHIPS Act is based on legislation known as the Recompete Act, written by Representative Derek Kilmer, a Democratic House member from Washington State. Matt Hildreth, head of ruralorganizing.org, says big cities typically are first in line for federal grants, but he believes this program could change that.
It targets funds specifically to small towns and rural communities and communities across the country that are economically distressed and ensures that they have a shot at getting access to those federal funds as well.
He notes the vast majority of communities classified as economically distressed are rural. Hildreth notes each place has different development needs, from more broadband to help transitioning between industries. He says under this pilot, communities will guide the investments.
It allows local leaders to have the flexibility they need to invest in the challenges that they see in their specific community. It's not a one-size-fits-all approach. It is a locally-led approach.
For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
Now that so many workers are doing their jobs remotely, some people are eyeing all the empty office space in downtown Portland and seeing an opportunity for affordable housing. Willamette Week is reporting that Mayor Ted Wheeler's office is currently drafting a city ordinance that would turn that space into modestly priced apartments. The idea is to provide incentives for owners and developers to convert those now deserted offices into residential space. The owners would be required to keep what is being called workforce affordable housing for occupants who make 120% or less of the median family income for 15 years. The report says this draft ordinance was motivated by a recent University of California study showing that downtown Portland's recovery from the pandemic is lagging behind other major U.S. cities. Portland ranked number 60 out of 62 cities studied. NASA's latest mission is halted because of leaking fuel. KBOO's Josh Salem has more on the stalled moon mission.
NASA halted the launch debut of its new moon rocket today. The flight would have been the first in their Artemis project, a program planning to put astronauts back on the moon for the first time since the Apollo missions ended some 50 years ago. NASA repeatedly stopped and started the fueling of the Space Launch System rocket this morning because of a leak of highly explosive hydrogen gas. The leak occurred in the same area that experienced seepage during a dress rehearsal last spring. In addition, NASA was unable to properly chill one of the rocket's four main engines, and severe weather threatened the launch anyway. NASA Administrator Bill Nelson said, quote, "This is a very complicated machine, a very complicated system, and all those things have to work, and you don't want to light the candle until it's ready to go," end quote. The rocket was supposed to propel a capsule into orbit around the moon. The six-week mission was scheduled to end with the capsule returning to Earth in October. 322 feet tall, this was the most powerful rocket ever built by NASA. No astronauts were inside the rocket's capsule. Instead, it held three test dummies fitted with sensors to measure vibration and cosmic radiation. This spacecraft would have been tested in ways that could never be attempted with humans aboard. Thousands of people attended the aborted launch, including Vice President Kamala Harris. NASA hopes actual astronauts will circle the moon as soon as 2024. A two-person lunar landing could follow in 2025. The next launch attempt will not take place until Friday at the earliest and could be postponed until next month. For KBOO News, I'm Josh Salem.
Political analysts are predicting a smaller red wave in November, and the FBI raid on former President Donald Trump has not impacted his base. With more on these stories, it's Mary Sherman with 2022 Talks.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
Trump has cost them the House in 2018. He cost them the Senate in 2020. The House is likely to flip. But he very well could cost them a very winnable Senate majority, too.
Cook Political Report editor Jessica Taylor says the chance of a red wave in November is shrinking, as former President Donald Trump's chosen candidates create fractures in the GOP. With the overturning of Roe v. Wade and the January 6th congressional hearings, the generic congressional ballot is all but tied. Cook's outlook for the House had been a GOP gain of 20 to 30 seats, but that's now 10 to 20 seats. In the Senate, the parties appear tied with eight toss-up races. A little more than 2 months until Election Day, Political analyst Bill Kristol notes President Joe Biden's approval is up slightly at about 42%. He says an unpopular president is a drag on his party.
On the other hand, voters are also capable of saying, not crazy about Biden, but let's look at the two parties that are competing for control of the Senate and the House and what their agendas are and what their leadership is. And Trump is now as much on the ballot as Biden.
Meanwhile, an Axios poll found about 60% of Republicans want Trump as their nominee in 2024. Politico reporter Andrew Desiderio says Trump is using the FBI raid on Mar-a-Lago to his advantage.
That's why he was the one to make public the FBI search in the first place, right? Because he believed, and I think correctly, that this actually helps him with his base of voters.
On Friday, the Justice Department unsealed a heavily redacted search affidavit, which showed the boxes seized included confidential, secret, and top secret documents. Intelligence agencies say they are studying possible damage to national security. President Biden was asked about Trump's assertion that the documents were declassified.
I've declassified everything in the world. I'm president. I can do it all. Come on.
A federal judge is expected to appoint a special master to independently oversee a review of the material per a request from Trump's team. Some in the GOP say they're looking at suing the Biden administration over student loan forgiveness. Biden wants to erase up to $10,000 in debt for those meeting income requirements, $20,000 for Pell Grant recipients. Critics say that's unfair and doesn't fix the larger problem of skyrocketing college tuition. Biden is using the 2003 HEROES Act, which gives the education secretary power to give students debt relief during a crisis. Deputy Director of the National Economic Council, Bharat Ramamurthy, says the White House will defend the plan in court.
The president was clear from the beginning that he did not want to move forward on this unless it was clear that it was legally available to him.
I'm Mary Sherman for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our eTrust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Coast Range Audio that explores Oregon's marine reserves, Otter Rock, Cape Perpetua, and Redfish Rocks. At 6 p.m., it's Labor Radio, then at 6:30, it's Prison Pipeline, and at 7, Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather, mostly clear with a few clouds and a low of 58 degrees. Tomorrow's weather, another hot and sunny one with a high of 98 in town. Today in history, in 1965, the Gemini 5 spacecraft returned to Earth. It landed in the Atlantic Ocean, and it was the first time an American crewed space mission held the world record for duration. Our quote of the day is from Swedish actress Ingrid Bergman, who was born today in 1915. She said, quote, "Getting old is like climbing a mountain. You get a little out of breath, but the view is much better." Just in case you haven't gotten yours yet, federal officials will be ending their offering of free COVID tests through the Postal Service on September 2nd. Consumers have had the option since January to order free tests online that would be shipped for free. In the months since, there have been 16 tests available. But now, as students are heading back to school and experts anticipate a potential new Omicron wave, tests will not be available this way. The reason is that Congress did not add extra funding to replenish the supply of tests. The good news is that for folks who haven't received all 16 tests, there's still time to order them. Consumers can use the website covidtests.gov to enter their shipping information to request those tests. After September 2nd, COVID tests can still be found for little to no cost, but it will be through an insurance provider. A deal for $10 billion more to fight COVID fell through, so the White House has pivoted away from funding for tests towards funding for new vaccine booster shots. Officials expect those new vaccines will be available in September. The New York legislature has banned some types of medical debt collection, and a new report emphasizes how necessary it is. The backers of the two bills say this is the start of reforming New York hospitals' medical billing practices. Edwin J. Vieira has more on easing medical debt.
The New York State Legislature passed two bills aimed at easing medical debt back in May, and a new report indicates they're much needed. The first bill bans medical liens and wage garnishment. The second regulates the billing of so-called facility fees and requires that patients be informed about those fees up front. In a report on hospital debt, the Community Service Society of New York found 112 nonprofit hospitals sued more than 53,000 patients across the state between 2015 and 2020. Dr. Elizabeth Benjamin with the Society thinks facility fees help hospitals get money from people when they aren't supposed to be charged.
We helped one woman that went for her preventive mammogram, and she was charged a $250 facility fee. Well, that's just a secret end run around the Affordable Care Act's prohibition on charging copays for preventive services. You're not supposed to charge a patient a dime when they get a preventive service like a mammogram.
Hospitals had qualms about the facility fees bill. They said they shouldn't have to give notice about these fees every time a patient is seen, but could do it annually. Currently, 13 states and Washington, D.C. have similar laws against predatory medical debt collection tactics. While the New York bills regulate the collection of medical bills, they wouldn't prevent hospitals from suing patients. Rather, they limit how the funds can be collected. Benjamin says all nonprofit hospitals are supposed to offer certain patients financial aid on a sliding scale, but her group's research has found this isn't always the case. It supports the idea of developing a common application for hospital financial assistance. She calls the current system a disservice to patients.
One of the things that makes it so problematic is every hospital is allowed to design and implement its own application. Higher education figured this out. This is a really big burden, and that's why they set up a common application.
She adds that, in the Community Service Society's report, some hospitals weren't aware of what was being done in their name, while others knowingly continued these practices. By establishing new rules across the board that declare a person's home and wages as off-limits, Benjamin hopes patients will be more at ease the next time they need health care. I'm Edwin J. Vieira, New York News Connection.
As the U.S. population becomes more diverse, health professionals say one challenge in tackling the nursing shortage is increasing diversity in the nursing profession. That's in order to improve health equity. Danielle Smith has more on these efforts in Illinois.
The pandemic put new focus on the shortage of nurses in Illinois and across the country. But the lack of diversity in the nursing profession is another key aspect of this shortage. Chamberlain University is working to change that to improve health equity. The idea that everyone can live the healthiest life possible, no matter their race, community, or financial status. Dr. Jan Snow with Chamberlain says it's the nation's largest nursing school, and its three Illinois campuses have 2,500 students.
Chamberlain really strives to get our student population to look like our patient population. So just to give you an idea of the students in Illinois right now, 32% identify themselves as Caucasian, but 31% identify themselves as Latino.
She adds, on its 23 campuses in 15 states and online, the Chamberlain student body is made up of nearly 60% of students from minority groups underrepresented in nursing. By 2060, the Census Bureau predicts that people typically identified as minorities in the U.S. will make up 57% of the population. So it's important that healthcare professionals reflect that diversity. Gladys Riello graduated from Chamberlain and is now an instructor at the Addison campus. She says for many people in the Latino culture, nursing is a calling.
It's that culture of care. I think we've been brought up in such a culture of caringness that it's just almost natural for Latinas to become a nurse. We're used to caring and seeing our parents caring for our grandparents, our family members, those that are ill.
She explains finances are the biggest barriers for many who want to pursue nursing careers. She says there are many scholarships and encourages people to apply for them to avoid graduating in debt. Research from the Center for American Progress found students of color tend to get more associate degrees in nursing rather than bachelor's degrees, which take longer to complete and cost more. I'm Danielle Smith, Illinois News Connection.
The state of Utah is suing the Biden administration over reinstating the size of national monuments that former President Trump had reduced. With that story and more, it's Danielle Montano with National Native News.
For National Native News, I'm Daniel Montano in for Antonia Gonzalez.
The state of Utah is suing the Biden administration for restoring the size of two national monuments reduced by former President Trump. In a joint statement, Utah's political leaders say the Grand Staircase Escalante and Bears Ears National Monuments are simply too big to be properly managed by the federal government and that they draw unmanageable numbers of visitors. They further allege Biden's move does not comply with the Antiquities Act, which states that land protected by the law should be confined to the smallest area necessary for the care and management of the land. The Hill reports groups allied with the administration argue presidents have historically used the law to protect important landscapes such as the Grand Canyon, and that the monuments need to be preserved and protected from threats like oil and gas extraction. The state's attorney general filed the suit on behalf of Governor Spencer Cox and other state officials and the entire congressional delegation. Trump reduced the monuments by more than 2 million combined acres in 2017. Biden then restored the original boundaries a year into his presidency. He referenced tribal rights when restoring the areas, calling Bears Ears a place of healing that is revered and sacred to several tribes. Tribal gaming has rebounded substantially despite the continuing challenges of the COVID-19 pandemic, bringing in a record $39 billion of revenue in 2021. That's according to numbers from the National Indian Gaming Commission. That's up 13% over 2019 and 40% over 2020, marking a record single-year increase. In a press release, NIGC says all areas showed some positive growth since reopening after pandemic-related closures brought on the largest decrease of revenue on record. But the NIGC recognized the industry rebounded strongest on the coasts and that rural tribes are still struggling to get back on their feet. NIGC Chairman Sequoia Simmermeyer says the organization will continue to provide support to struggling tribes, offering training and applying regulatory lessons that have worked in other areas. Tribal gaming accounts for more than 40% of all gaming revenue nationally, which comes to $92 billion total. The Fond du Lac Band of Lake Superior Chippewa are celebrating the return of burial lands. Danielle Kading reports nearly 200 Ojibwe graves were removed from burial grounds on a strip of land in Lake Superior.
The tribe settled on the sandbar stretching nearly 3 miles along Lake Superior as early as 400 years ago. By the mid-19th century, Chief Joseph Osagi was leading a small but thriving community there. But in 1918, Osagi descendant and Superior native Lori Madden says the community and the remains of her ancestors were wrongfully removed.
They took 198 graves and they moved them by scow down the Nemadji River to St. Francis Cemetery.
The remains were reburied elsewhere to make way for U.S. Steel's plans to put up ore docks that were never built, and the removal was paid for with federal funds intended to benefit tribal members. Now the city of Superior has returned the tribe's sacred burial sites. Fond du Lac tribal chairman Kevin Dupy searched for words to capture the feeling of the moment.
I just want to go in the woods. I think I should be at Wisconsin Point right now, or St. Francis Cemetery, telling them what we did.
Now Dupy says their people can finally be left to rest. For National Native News, I'm Daniel Kading.
The last member of an uncontacted indigenous group in Brazil has died. Authorities found his body in a hammock outside a straw hut. Officials say it appears he died of natural causes. The BBC reports the man's name is not known, but outsiders refer to him as the Man of the Hole because he was known to dig large holes to hide in or to capture animals. He had not been contacted by outsiders for nearly 3 decades, but officials monitored his whereabouts for his own safety. He was the last of a group whose other 6 remaining members were killed in 1995, presumably by ranchers, miners, or loggers wanting to expand their land. For National Native News, I'm Daniel Montano.
As global warming brings more hot days, the risk of heat-related illnesses is rising. So how should people stay safe in the heat at outdoor summer events? Dr. Anthony Leisowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Leisowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Late summer is the time to kick off tailgating at football games. Enjoy the rides at a carnival or county fair, or dance the day away at a music festival. But while at these events, people can be at risk of heat exhaustion or heat stroke, especially as global warming brings more hot days.
A lot of times people go to these festivals and are not prepared to be in the sun and out in the heat as long as they are all day. So preparing ahead of time will make a big difference.
Joe Phillips is battalion chief and fire marshal for the City of Charlottesville, Virginia Fire Department. He recommends people start drinking a lot of water and limiting their alcohol consumption the day before an event, so they're well hydrated when they arrive. They should continue hydrating throughout the event and seek cooling if they feel too hot or get cramps. Phillips says event organizers should also prepare by providing designated cooling areas such as shade tents or misters and free drinking water.
I've worked many events where people are waiting in line to get in and the event would have for them pallets of water right as the crowd comes through.
So people can stay safe while enjoying fun in the sun. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Monday, August 29th, 2022. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. You can call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Josh Salem and Michelle Coppola. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Edwin J. Vieira, Eric Tegetoff, Mary Sherman, Danielle Smith, Daniel Montano, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Michelle Coppola, and remember, all of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our wonderful members. If you'd like to become a member and support your local community radio station, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Coast Range Radio.